Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm David DeForest reporting. Republican U.S. presidential hopefuls are taking aim at frontrunner Donald Trump in a debate in Michigan, a state soon to hold a primary election. The debate began with a question about criticism from the party's most recent nominee, Mitt Romney. In a speech Thursday, Romney called Trump a con man and a phony. Asked to respond to the criticism, Trump dismissed Romney as a failed candidate. The human rights group Amnesty International is accusing Russian and Syrian forces of deliberately targeting Syrian hospitals and medical facilities with airstrikes. Amnesty says it has evidence of attacks on six healthcare facilities. Meanwhile, the United Nations Special Envoy for Syria says the ceasefire there is holding largely. The European Union Council president is warning economic migrants against going to Europe. Henry Ridgewell takes a look.
Arriving in Athens Thursday for emergency talks with Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, European Council President Donald Tusk gave a stark warning to potential migrants thinking of travelling to Europe.
Wherever you are from, do not come to Europe. Do not believe the smugglers.
The United Nations estimates that more than half of the arrivals in Greece are fleeing war in Syria or Iraq, legitimate refugees rather than economic migrants. Henry Ridgewell, London.
A military court in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, has sentenced to death a former journalist who helped al-Shabaab kill five fellow reporters in Mogadishu. According to the court verdict, Hassan Hanafi assisted the Islamist militant group by identifying possible targets among journalists between 2007 and 2011. This is VOA News. According to state media, North Korea leader Kim Jong-un has ordered his military to be ready to use its nuclear weapons at any moment. According to a report in the Korean Central News Agency, Mr. Kim also threatened to carry out a preemptive attack on his nation's enemies, saying the current situation on the Korean Peninsula is very precarious. According to the South Korean Defense Ministry, North Korea fired six short-range missiles off its eastern coast on Thursday. Ukraine's foreign minister, Pavel Klimkin, reported no breakthrough after talks Thursday in Paris. He said he believes the Russians are not ready to discuss anything in detail. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said nothing as he walked past microphones and reporters after the meeting. Klimkin told reporters the talks with the Russian, French, and German foreign ministers were lively, but very difficult, especially on the issue of Ukrainians being held prisoner by Russian-backed rebels in the east. Afghanistan's chief peace negotiator says talks with Taliban-led insurgent groups are a last opportunity for an accord. Ayaz Ghul reports.
Direct peace negotiations between Afghan government and Taliban delegates are expected to take place in neighboring Pakistan later this week. A four-nation coordination group consisting of diplomats from Afghanistan, Pakistan, the United States, and China has prepared the ground for the long-awaited talks. The chief Afghan peace negotiator, Deputy Foreign Minister Hikmat Khalil Karzai, says the four countries involved have prepared a roadmap that will ensure a sustainable and productive peace process. Ayaz Ghul, Kabul.
UN and African Union leaders are strongly urging Sudan to grant freedom of movement to peacekeepers and aid workers in Darfur. Thousands of people are homeless in Darfur because of fighting there. Ban Ki-moon and Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma said there is no military solution to the conflict in Darfur and called for negotiations on a cessation of hostilities. A Burundian opposition group is welcoming the selection of former Tanzanian president Benjamin Mkapa as the new mediator for talks between the government and other stakeholders. The talks are aimed at ending the almost year-long crisis in Burundi. The East African Community Wednesday tapped the 77-year-old Mkapa to enliven the talks, which have bogged down. A spokesman for the National Council for the Restoration of the Arusha Accord denied that Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, who had been spearheading the mediation, was being sidelined. Taking a brief look at market activities on Wall Street, U.S. stock indexes were up at the close of trade today. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 4th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's former vice president accuses President Mugabe and his wife Grace of destroying the country's revolution.
I really don't know where the president and his wife wants to take this country to. But the end result is they are actually destroying ZANU-PF. They are destroying the revolution.
That's former Zimbabwe Vice President Joyce Mujuru. We'll have a preview of Sunday's Benin presidential election. Local women in one of Kenya's provinces are at the forefront of a water initiative. And the United Nations accuses South Sudan's government and rebels of denying aid agencies access to some areas.
There is a problem of access throughout the country and by all parties. What are the humanitarian items that are not permitted to go? All of them. Food, water, healthcare, whatever vulnerable people need when they have been displaced.
Ariane Quintier is a spokesperson for the UN mission in South Sudan. The European Union president warns migrants not to travel to Europe, and Sony Music Company expands its reach into Africa. Those stories plus Marco Woman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader of the newly launched Zimbabwe People First Party and former Vice President Joyce Mujuru has accused her former boss, President Robert Mugabe, and his wife Grace of trying to destroy the ruling ZANU-PF party and the country's revolution. Undimiyake Mwakalele of VOA Zimbabwe program reports from Washington.
In an interview with the Associated Press Wednesday, looking calm but determined to stand her ground, Mujuru took a sharp aim at her former boss in her new role as an opposition leader, challenging his leadership.
I really don't know where the president and his wife wants to take this country to. But the end result is they are actually destroying ZANU-PF. They are destroying the revolution.
Mujuru stuck to her claims that the charges against her, that she was disloyal to the president or planned to topple him, were lies, and that she's just one target of the many former liberation cadres the president and the party have set their eyes on to defame and destroy.
It looks like they're hunting down everybody who took part in the struggle. I, for one, if I want to say that, I did nothing. All those accusations were lies.
Contrary to what President Mugabe has consistently said, with the growing factionalism and infighting in his party, that there are proper channels to address concerns and that members should not shame the party by going public with their grievances, Mujuru said the president is not that accessible and was certainly not to her.
Even when you try and seek for audience to try and reason with him, he does not give you. During the time when I was with him, I asked for that, which never came. That's why I left.
Contradicting her early acknowledgement that she was dismissed by President Mugabe in writing, Mujuru now contends that she left the party on her own volition. She further suggests that President Mugabe is planning to pass on the baton of his legacy to his family.
I'm sure it's handing the power down from father to wife, to daughter to son. Maybe that's what they want to make it a dynasty.
Sparing no punches for the First Lady, Grace Mugabe, with whom she received her PhD from the University of Zimbabwe in 2014, Mujuru suggests that Mrs. Mugabe is the cause of much of what is going wrong in the ZANU-PF party, referencing the peace that existed under President Mugabe's first Ghanaian wife, Sally, who died in 1992.
I'm sure it's the young wife, because when Mama Sally was still alive, things were different. Once this one came, and before she was involved in this politics.
Mujuru says she now stands ready to lead, declaring that she has the caliber of leadership that Zimbabweans need.
Yes, there have been parties, but they've been telling us that in those parties, we have been missing revolutionaries, freedom fighters.
Reporting from Washington, this is Ndimiyake Mwakalyelye.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan, known as OMIS, says both the government and armed opposition forces are still denying aid agencies access to some areas. OMIS says areas in Upper Nile State are specifically affected, but South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makui denies the government is blocking aid agencies. Wakit Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
The United Nations is accusing both the government and the SPLM-IO of blocking aid agencies from accessing areas in need of humanitarian assistance. UNMISS spokesperson Ariane Gantin told the reporters at a weekly press briefing that aid agencies continue to face difficulties in delivering aid to some of the areas hosting people in need.
There is a problem of access throughout the country and by all parties. What are the humanitarian items that are not permitted to go? All of them. Food, water, healthcare, whatever vulnerable people need when they have been displaced and they in need of humanitarian assistance and support.
Gantaya says one agency that has been denied access to those areas is the UN's World Food Programme.
The World Food Programme wants to preposition food. They are doing airdrops, which is very costly and not as efficient as a convoy.
Jonathan Vetch, head of the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, in South Sudan, says his organization has also been denied access to several places. Vetch says UNICEF is trying to preposition aid in parts of the country, such as the Greater Upper Nile region, ahead of the rainy season when roads often become impassable. But Vetch says UNICEF is unable to deliver aid to the intended areas because there are several blockades on the roads. He says security forces are also heavily taxing trucks delivering aid.
We need free and unhindered access to all parts of the country for humanitarian aid. We understand the need for security, but nobody should be asking for payment for bribes of drivers or those who are delivering these humanitarian supplies.
Vetch says between Juba and Bentiu alone, UNICEF has documented 54 different checkpoints along the road. Major Dixon Galwaka, deputy spokesperson of the SPLA-IO, denies his group is blocking aid agencies from accessing areas under their control.
This is baseless and this is unfounded, actually, unfounded story. We cannot block the humanitarian. It is the government that has been trying, you know, to block the humanitarian to deliver the services.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwee also denies government forces block aid agencies across South Sudan.
These roadblocks are not a hamper because we are in a security situation. If we are in a security situation, we will not just allow any convoy to move. You remember last time when we apprehended the convoy which was taking relief, we apprehended it in Rumbegu's arms. Our security first.
During his visit to Juba last week, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called on both parties to the conflict to lift all blockades against the delivery of humanitarian aid by agencies across the country. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Odu in Juba.
The people of Benin go to the polls on Sunday to choose a new president. A record 33 candidates are vying to replace incumbent Thomas Boni Yayi, who is stepping down after serving his maximum 2 terms. Emily Yop reports from Abidjan.
One frontrunner among Benin's nearly 3 dozen presidential candidates is current Prime Minister Lionel Zinsou. Zinsou helms a coalition of 3 political parties. It is a distinct advantage, said regional political analyst and director of the Wati think tank, Jiriabi. He says Zinsou has the support of political parties that were considered to be in the opposition, and he also has the support of the ruling party, so that gives him a certain political weight. But Yabi says it is still anyone's race. He says it is a very open election, and there are other candidates who could gather a larger number of votes. Zinsou has faced criticism over his ties to France. The investment banker was born and raised there and has only recently returned to Benin. He was named prime minister last June. His top challenger include food industry magnate Sébastien Ajavon and cotton tycoon Patrice Talon. Talon broke with President Boni Yayi after he accused Talon of trying to poison him. Talon only returned to Benin last year following a presidential pardon. Analysts say the candidates have, for the most part, been raising the same top campaign issue like corruption, jobs and agricultural reform. If no candidate wins a clear majority Sunday, Benin will hold a runoff election 2 weeks later. Emilia for VOA News in Abidjan.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, March 4th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send a shout out to listeners on these our VOA affiliate stations, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, and Radio Hard Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. 16 million Kenyans lack access to safe drinking water, and 60% of rural people remain off the water grid. Lenny Ruvaga reports for VOA from Kenya's Kajiado province on an initiative enlisting local women to try to fill the gap.
Kajiado gets little rainfall. The Kenyan capital, Nairobi, is 125 miles away from Esther Kuma's homestead. The mother of nine has to buy 10 jerry cans of water a day from local businessmen. Even then, she says, the water isn't always safe to drink.
We have to go as far as 10 kilometers to reach water since there are no rivers around. That's why we're forced to buy water. When we hear of anyone selling water, we have no choice but to buy.
Coca-Cola has been setting up these eco centers around East Africa since 2014 to provide safe drinking water. The centers get water through boreholes. They use solar power and a purification technology called reverse osmosis. Cabinet Secretary for Water and Irrigation, Eugene Wamalwa, says misappropriation of funds in his ministry has kept so many rural Kenyans off the state water grid.
I've told them in no uncertain terms there will be no sacred cows, and coming into a ministry that was one of those affected by the cleanup that His Excellency the President led, we have said we are not going to go back to the ways of the past, the ways of corruption.
The county digs public boreholes, but residents must still trek many kilometers to reach them. This newly opened eco center has 15 employees who will deliver safe water by improvised motorbikes known as tuk-tuks. The 20-liter cans sell for 50 cents.
The charge of the costs to the customer is actually not very high, because what we do, they can pay these into installments. We don't tell them that you have to do it that particular day. You can do it in installments until the other time you're refilling.
This new eco center hopes to serve around 3,000 residents, and plans are underway to replicate the initiative in other areas. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Oloitoktok, Kenya.
The European Union Council president has warned economic migrants against going to Europe, saying they will be risking their lives and money for nothing. Henry Richwell reports.
Arriving in Athens Thursday for emergency talks with Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, European Council President Donald Tusk gave a stark warning to potential migrants thinking of travelling to Europe.
I want to appeal to all potential illegal economic migrants, wherever you are from, do not come to Europe. Do not believe the smugglers. Do not risk your lives and your money. It is all for nothing. Greece or any other European country will no longer be a transit country.
The United Nations estimates that more than half of the arrivals in Greece are fleeing war in Syria or Iraq, legitimate refugees rather than economic migrants. Ian Bond is from the London-based Centre for European Reform.
It's the sheer effort of trying to process those and to separate the legitimate refugees from those who are just economic migrants, which I think is really overwhelming the resources that Greece and its EU partners have been able to put into the problem at the moment.
Night and day on the main highway heading north through Greece, hundreds of migrants walk the last few kilometres towards the border with Macedonia. The frontier remains effectively closed as tightened border controls across the Balkans have had a ripple effect further south. Thousands of people are camped out at the frontier. Babar Baloch is spokesperson for the United Nations Refugee Agency.
I think certainly anger is building up. People are very restless with families, with children, with women, that they have been here for many days, and there doesn't seem to be a resolution to this. But that's our worry and our concern.
Many Syrians say they have fled airstrikes carried out by government forces and their Russian allies. NATO's supreme commander in Europe, US General Philip Breedlove, has warned that Moscow is, in his words, weaponizing the refugee crisis. Meeting in northern France Thursday, the French and British leaders said they would pressure Moscow to end its attacks against Syrian civilians and the moderate opposition during a conference call with Russian President Vladimir Putin scheduled for Friday. A shaky ceasefire in Syria appears to be largely holding. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Sony Music Entertainment recently announced the opening of a new Lagos office, its first West African Sony office in decades. The move is intended to expand the company's Africa reach. Sean Watson, Africa Managing Director of Sony Music, tells Ricky Stryak they hope to innovate new mobile solutions to the music market as well as work with local artists.
We've been looking at Africa, or sub-Saharan Africa at least, from the South African company and, you know, with our colleagues in Europe for about a good 5 years now, thinking of, you know, what opportunity we should take to stretch our legs and re-enter some of the key markets. The obvious economic indicators in Africa as a frontier market and a growth opportunity was the big sort of signal way back that we should start doing this. The other thing then was the critical mass achieved by the mobile networks. When we saw what they were able to do as a distribution backbone, it also gave us a lot of hope.
When we talk about you guys opening up an office, what does that mean in real terms? Does that mean you'll be signing more local musicians? Or what does it mean you'll be looking at distributing all music from all over the world to a local market?
All of the above. Having not been in the market, and again, this is part of the reason why we need a local presence, is you can't exactly expect a local artist community to buy into your offering if you're not in their backyard. The first move would be that Sony represents millions of songs. Our first step would be to invest our catalog in that market. Out of that investment, the revenue that we generate then gets reinvested into artist development concurrently. But we don't expect that to be as immediate as the delivery of our international catalog. Yes, we signed Davido, and off the back of that, then Michael's mandate and his brief is to work with the artistic community in Lagos to develop a model that we typically use to invest in local repertoire and develop the local artist and community. Nigeria has developed, you know, since the major record companies exited, you know, over a decade ago, has developed its own system. It's quite different to the rest of the world. So the other thing for us was obviously not to just impose ourselves. What we'd rather do is try and integrate how we do things with the way things are done on the ground.
Is there any kind of excitement about the fact that there is an ingenuity to West Africa when it comes to these things? They figure out a solution, and it might be a solution that nobody thought about. And the mobile saturation is so large in some of these markets as well.
Personally, that's probably what I'm most excited about, is the innovation in Africa around mobile. I think, you know, African success stories lead the innovation in the mobile world. When you think of products like M-Pesa, which is mobile banking.
How exciting, I feel like, is it to be in West Africa, where music is just so integral to everything?
Well, you know, what we've seen is that the two pillars of any proud, upstanding African community are music and football. It's almost a perfect marketplace when you think of how important music is. But it's now obviously making sure that it's accessible and affordable based on the resource that the African community has to access music. And that's our challenge, is how we, you know, reverse engineering European and US models to make them feasible and so that we can integrate them in Africa may not be the right approach. It may be somewhere along the line. We are reverse engineering what we have, but we're also meeting a grassroots up development story and where those two connect.
That was Sean Watson, Africa Managing Director of Sony Music Entertainment. He spoke to Ricky Stryak from Johannesburg. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Mark, a very good Friday morning to you.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Ethiopia is Africa's most improved men's national football team, while Sao Tome and Principe has slipped by the widest margin in the world, according to the latest FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday. Ranked 31st, Cape Verde Islands is Africa's highest placed team. African champions Ivory Coast are 36th, Algeria 37th, Ghana 41st, Tunisia 47th, Senegal 48th, and Egypt 53rd. The Democratic Democratic Republic of Congo is 58th, Republic of Congo 59th, and Cameroon 61st. In women's football, Tanzania hosts Zimbabwe at the start of the 2016 Africa Women's Cup of Nations qualifiers in Dar es Salaam today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Mali welcome Morocco to Bamako. Senegal engage Guinea in Dakar. Burkina Faso face Tunisia in Ouagadougou. And Botswana are at home to Mauritius in Lobatse. On Sunday, Libya host Egypt in Sousse, Tunisia. Algeria tackle Ethiopia in Algiers. And Zambia engage Namibia in Lusaka. In rugby news, Kenya face Russia as South Africa tackle Canada in their opening preliminary matches at the IRB 7 series in Las Vegas, Nevada State in the United States of America today, Friday. Kenya will also play Portugal and New Zealand in other Group A preliminaries, while South Africa will encounter Wales and the United States of America in Group D fixtures. At the start of this fifth leg in the nine-leg series, South Africa are second in the overall standings with 69 points. Kenya is eighth with 42 points, while Zimbabwe is 17th with 1 point. In Olympic news, a team composed of refugees from across the world will compete under the Olympic flag at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics in Brazil, the International Olympic Committee president Thomas Bach confirmed in Lausanne, Switzerland. The team will be selected and assisted with training and preparations by the IOC and will also be housed in the Olympic Village like all the other national teams. The Olympic flag will be raised and the Olympic anthem played in the event any of the athletes in this team of refugees wins a medal. This unprecedented initiative is about the Olympic movement showing solidarity with the worldwide refugee crisis. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, March 4th.
This is Bapa Adamare Fota from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria. Another crisis again. Lagos is engulfed with fire. Southerners killing Northerners. This is motivated by geopolitical and ethnical sentiment. My question here is that, where is Nigeria and who is a Nigerian? Thank you. This is Bapa Adamare Fota from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The UN and African Union chiefs are strongly urging Sudan to grant freedom of movement to peacekeepers and aid workers in Darfur, where tens of thousands of civilians are homeless because of fighting. The UN says a surge in fighting between Sudanese forces and rebels from the Sudan Liberation Army has driven 90,000 civilians from their homes in northern Darfur over the last 6 weeks. But UN officials have been unable to confirm reports of another 50,000 refugees in central Darfur because aid workers have not been given access to the region. More than a decade of fighting in Darfur between the rebels and government forces who have been aided by Arab militias has killed more than 300,000 people and created 2.6 million refugees. That's it for this Friday, February. That's it for this Friday, March 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us and join us again tomorrow for more on Monday morning for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing all of you a very, very good weekend.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Madu discusses how new technology can be utilized effectively in disease surveillance such as Zika and Ebola. Our guest is Graham Dodge, CEO of Sick Weather, a U.S.-based disease surveillance company. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.